Paul and Jordana, Dave Josephson, keeping us all out of trouble today, as he does every weekday, and we are grateful for DJ's guidance.
He's trying.
We're still stepping in it.
Not doing a very good job right now.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Lower your expectations.
We are anxiously awaiting the presidential press conference, as we always do, around 4 o'clock. Keep us.
Yep.
We will keep you posted, and we will break away from programming when that does happen, because it's important that we hear and what is happening. Any new orders, we need to know. But right now, we're very grateful to have Lori Watson, our certified sex therapist. And I need to start calling her Dr. Lori Watson. Just got her PhD. We're very proud of her. So Dr. Lori Watson is joining us on the Home Service Plus Energy. Yeah, David, see, this is the trouble you got to keep me out of. The CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus Hotline. I'll just read it like you wrote it, and we'll all be safe. Lori, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thank you so much.
You know, how are you faring in all of this? Yeah.
It's supposed to be our worst week ever in the U.S., and, you know, people are out of work, and people are dying. It's scary out there. But I really wanted to take some time to think about the children and their reactions so that we can help the kids cope with this COVID season.
Lori, these are tough times for everybody. And I don't know the best way to deal with this. I don't have any young kids anymore in the house. But just talking with some of my nephews and nieces on the phone. Some of them are younger. They have questions. I don't want to lie to them. How do you break the news? Is it fair to say, look, this is just a really severe case of the flu? We get the flu every winter, and most of us are just fine. You may get sick for a few days. And I just, part of that rubs me the wrong way, because this is not just like the flu. This is 10 times worse than the flu. How would you tell a young person what's going on right now?
Well, I think that you have just done what we often do, is we imagine what the child needs to hear, what kind of data will be comforting to them. But the thing is with kids, is we want to know what they're worried about first. You know, before we answer with data or facts or something that we think is comforting, we want to ask them what they're worried about. So I often say, you know, a good question to ask kids that often elicits information is, you know, hey, I heard from my neighbor Susie, and her daughter Shelby is really worried that you know, Aunt Susie is going to catch this because she's older and is going to die. You know, and so is this what you worry about, honey? Are you worried about our family? Are you worried about mom and dad or grandpa and grandma? What are the things you're hearing from your friends? And that makes it a little less personal, and the child might be more apt to open up about exactly what they're worried about. And then we can offer them the data, the information that is relevant to their particular worries, you know, versus just imagining that we think we know what they're worried about. We don't. And the other thing is, kids are often really quiet about their worst fears. You know, the worst fear really for most children is losing their parents or losing attachment figures, people that they love. And so, and we don't want to put these thoughts in their mind, right, because we don't want them to worry further. But we do want to know if this is what they're really worried about. We want to say something comforting, and we have to know what it is. And just them expressing their fears will help them feel less anxious. Does that make sense?
So
yeah,
it does make sense, yeah. Lori. Then how do you reassure them about being safe? Because the numbers are grim, and a lot of parents don't feel safe. So they almost feel like liars when they tell their kids, don't worry, you're going to be okay, everything's going to be okay, because they don't know that that's true. So how do they reassure their kids without being liars?
So we don't want to say, it never happened to me, you don't need to worry about it. But we do need to offer the children the practical steps that we're taking to keep ourselves safe. So it's like, look, you know, as a family, we're kind of holed up at the home together. And that's so that we stay safe. that we don't catch the virus. And if I have to go to the grocery store, I put on gloves, I wear a mask, then I make sure that I take all that off outside before I come in and I wash my hands. And, you know, at least offer them some practical tips that you are taking to keep yourself safe. And that's not a guarantee, but it's saying I'm a cautious person. I'm being as cautious as I possibly can be. You know, so that Lori, it gives them some sense that you're thinking ahead.
Lori, we're having some issues with your cell phone. Just stand next to the window.
No.
Go out on the ledge,
okay,
but be very careful. And you talked about reassuring them and routines, right? Having a routine. We have about 60 seconds left, but you have some really good advice.
Yeah, definitely, you know, never-ending stretches of time gives kids too much time to worry. So keep regular bedtimes, study times, play breaks. Keep these kids exercising. You know, build an obstacle course inside your home or outside in the yard where it's only them. And I think the most important thing is extra hugs right now, extra cuddles at night. Physical touch regulates anxiety. It will help them calm down in their body. So offer them a lot of touch, you know, hair tossles, kisses goodnight. This is the time to really pour it on and offer your body connection as a loving way to help them feel less anxious.
Lori Watson, always terrific advice. Thank you so much. You can listen to her on
Thank you.
Okay, guys.
Yes,
stay safe.
Thank you, dear.
That's,
you know,
right.
I think she's really right about that. The physicality, I know we're supposed to physically distance from each other, but I think hugging your kids is something that's really, really important right now.
Boy, there's going to be a lot of hugging when this is over. Long lost. Hey, and I hope it's soon. When we come back, Dr. Michael Osterholm had some interesting comments yesterday, and we want you to hear it next. Paul and Jordana, hope your Monday is going well and you're not too bored and you're staying safe and you're staying 6 feet away from people and farm animals wherever possible. Do the best you can here. We're all trying to find our way and stay out of trouble. Yesterday, I had an opportunity to talk with Dr. Michael Osterholm, the noted University of Minnesota epidemiologist. I had some questions. By the way, I just want to say, as soon as President Trump comes up to the podium for the daily press conference, we will break away immediately. Usually, they say 4 o'clock, but it usually doesn't start till closer to 4:30. But we have our finger on the button, and we'll capture the entire press conference as soon as he steps up to the podium. In the meantime, I asked Dr. Osterholm, how does this pandemic compare with the previous mother of all pandemics, the Spanish flu of 1918?
The ability we have right now to change that will be largely tied to what we can get with therapeutic agents, drugs. If we can reduce the mortality, that'll help. Those aren't going to come anytime soon. What I mean by that is it'll take months before we're able to determine if the drugs are both effective and safe. And then it's going to take even longer to make them and to distribute them. And we also have to remember that there are 8 billion people on the face of the earth that want them, not just us here in the U.S. So we're going to have to understand when we do produce them, who gets them first and under what conditions is still to be determined. Vaccines, I think, are farther off. If we can get a safe and effective vaccine, we're talking at least 18 to 24 months. And, you know, as much as we're going to try to suppress the transmission of this virus from these lockdowns, et cetera, that's not going to work long term in terms of shutting it off. We're already seeing today, you know, after having heard from a number of quote-unquote skeptics about the seriousness of the situation, well, you know, the Chinese and the people in Singapore and Korea know how to handle this. And, you know, we've been saying, look, this is like water. It's going to find the place to leak through and get in, and it's going to create a problem. And you may have heard that yesterday Singapore declared a state of emergency. They now have much more widespread person-to-person transmission from unknown sources in Singapore. Today they had their largest number of cases ever. Same thing has happened in Korea. China is now reporting out an increasing number of cases. They've closed the movie theaters again. And, you know, this has been 5 months with some of the most draconian population movement restrictions ever seen before in China, and they still haven't gotten rid of it. And so I think that this is a message to us here that, you know, as much as I see the national agenda talking about the next couple of weeks, which I surely don't want to minimize, and looking at what's happening there, you know, people understand we don't have a plan for what are we going to do for months and months and months. And that's what I think is important. And the other sobering fact today, Paul, that I never would have imagined in my career that would happen is on February 28th, COVID-19 was below the 60th leading cause of death in the United States. By this afternoon, COVID-19 will be the number one cause of death in this country.
Really?
That's a pretty sobering fact.
Holy cow. Can you set expectations? I know none of us have a crystal ball, but take us out through the next few months. It's not going to be business as usual. There is no normal until we have a vaccine. But are you concerned about a society of haves and have-nots, people that have contracted COVID-19 yep. and survived and have some level of immunity? Okay, you can go back to work. You can provide for your family. By the way, those of you who have not contracted this, you are isolated and you are quarantined. How do you think this is going to play out, Doctor?
Well, let me just take a step back. And I know for some of the listeners, this will not be satisfactory. And I frankly don't care. I'm going to tell you what I know and how I know it. You know, I've served roles in the last five presidential administrations, including in this one. I served as a year for science envoy for the State Department, traveling around the world on behalf of U.S. interests in infectious diseases. I've served two Democratic governors, two Republican governors, one independent governor, and I was at the State Health Department. And no one could tell you my partisan politics. I have tried very hard, the course of several administrations, to improve on the strategic national stockpile. So when I tell you right now that we're pretty much rudderless at the federal level, we are. We do not have a plan. We go from press conference to press conference, from tweet to tweet, what our plan is. And the issues that I just shared with you, for example, we don't really have anybody working or looking at those. The very points you just raised, how do we bring people back into the society? We can't just suppress ourselves for the next 18 months. We'll destroy the economy. And I'm not talking about dollars and cents. I'm talking about the essential services we need. I mean, when's the last time anybody figured out how to do remote working to collect garbage? You know, fire, police, our food supply, our drug supply. I can go through the laundry list. How do we keep this going? So all the questions you just asked are right on the mark. And that's where I think we will get through, is if we start to develop answers for those and not just, you know, happy talk. The second thing I think that's really important around all this is just leadership. You know, people have raised this issue of what this is all about. I mean, it's FDR, it's fireside chats, it's Winston Churchill, and getting a country through a crisis. You know, I think that's where I see, as a society, no matter how tough things get, we will get through it if we have that leadership. If we don't, I do see really very difficult days ahead. 50 state governors right now are all fighting for the same resources. It literally, when they describe being on eBay, it's almost that we should have a federal presence. We should be working to coordinate and collaborate. And when I hear the federal government say, well, you know, we're the place of last resort, that's like telling every pilot in the country, you can land at the airport, and only if you're about to crash will we at the control tower be the voice of last, you know, support. That's not the way it works. And so, if anything, we need to understand that the business community, our citizens in general, government has to function differently right now. And it's going to take leadership at the top to do that. And it just is simply not there.
Doctor, last question. In recent days, Dr. Oz, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham have been touting hydroxychloroquine as a treatment. Do we have the data to be able to say with any degree of confidence that this can, in fact, maybe shorten the symptoms, make the symptoms less severe? Is the data there yet?
Absolutely not. It's not. And I would urge people to allow these drug studies, which are being done as quickly as possible, to give us the data. I have been involved with too many situations where people had the perfect cure. Anecdotally, it was very strong, and some even had somewhat written data, only to see when these studies were really subjected to the kind of what we call double-blind placebo-controlled trial, where we know, you know, some get drugs, some get something else or a placebo, and then we look to see how well a difference does it make. And so I would be very cautious. Also, what people don't understand is that drug actually has some very severe toxicity with it if you take too much of it. And we've already seen cases in individuals who have become severely ill from taking too much of the drug on their own. And so I think at this point we have a number of therapeutic agents, drugs that are in study right now. Everything that can be done is being done as quickly as possible. I think that's one of the places we have shined in this country, is setting up these drug trials, and we will know. And I wish we knew today. I just wish we knew today. We won't. We don't. But I would definitely not say at this point that that drug has any reason to think that that is or isn't going to work yet.
Wow.
Paul, that was a very troubling interview.
Yeah, I was taken aback by some of his comments. First of all, I have a lot of respect for Michael Osterholm. I think he tells it like it is, like Anthony Fauci. He is our Anthony Fauci. And he's saying we got not just a blinking yellow light, we've got a blinking red light in terms of not only dealing with the current pandemic, but what comes next. How do we get the economy restarted? How do we get some people back to work? How do we protect the high-risk people who still have not contracted COVID-19? So he brings up some really troubling questions that we need to have answers to. And he talks about a Manhattan Project for COVID-19, that we need the best minds on the planet converging to come up with answers. Mm-hmm. And we should be leading the country with this, or leading the world with this, with our approach. American exceptionalism should apply to COVID-19.
For sure. For sure. And we do, when you see the kids at 3M trying to jury rig the ventilators. You know, we have great people working on great things, but you're absolutely right that we need more.
We're waiting for the president. He will be coming up momentarily. DJ, should we break or should we just go up to CBS News? All right. We'll be right back. Still kind of murky out there. The sun was peeking out, and we did see 60. It's 58 now. Should be a dry evening, but it's ripe for some heavy showers and thunderstorms late tonight, especially central and northern Minnesota. A few of the storms could approach severe limits. The Weather Service talking about the possibility of some large hail in parts of central Minnesota as close to the metro as St. Cloud. We shall see, but I think we could wake up to the growl of thunder tomorrow morning. A low right around 50, 68 tomorrow. Any early morning puddles giving way to sunshine by afternoon should mellow into a nice day. Wednesday rain showers 57, a cold wind sprinkles Thursday 45. The sun comes out Friday, high 46, more rain showers Saturday 51, and then another cool front, 47 Sunday, only 42 for a high Monday with some sunshine. So old man winter still not done with us quite yet. No accumulating snow in sight, if that's any consolation. 58 degrees now. From the Rudy Luther Toyota Weather Center, I'm Paul Douglas on News Talk 830 WCCO. And what it all comes down to
is that everything's gotta be fine, fine, fine. Yes, it will, my friends. We are going to be okay. We're taking your calls now at 651-989-9226 as we wait for the presidential press conference. And here's the topic. Last Friday, the president announced he will direct FEMA to prevent the export of the N95 masks, surgical gloves, and other medical protective gear. He said he might make exceptions to help Italy and Spain, who have been the hardest hit. And he added that we are not happy with 3M. Here's what the president had to say.
We're not happy with 3M. We're not happy. And the people that dealt with it directly are not at all happy with 3M. So we'll see whether or not we do. I heard what he had to say today. I don't know the gentleman, but we're not happy with 3M.
So the spat between the president and 3M began the day before when Trump used his authority under the Defense Production Act to direct the government to acquire the appropriate number of masks. And that's fine. But 3M says if we stop shipping to other countries like Canada, because that's where most of them are going, Canada and Latin America, he says there could be a lot of pushback. People will not ship to us. In fact, they tried to get 10 million masks back from China, which, and they're produced there for 3M, and they had to get the approval of the Chinese government, which the Chinese government gave it to 3M to ship the masks back to the United States. But 3M is saying, we have to service the world. There will be repercussions if you don't let us ship masks outside, especially to places like Canada. So the question becomes, what do you think we should do? Should 3M be allowed to ship everywhere? Or no, is it America first? So we're taking your calls at 651-989-9226. I say, you know, I think Tikkun Olam, we have to live by healing the world, and we have to help each other out. I understand the need for them to be here, and the ones, that's important too, but I think there's a way to do both.
Well, it would be like saying to BMW, you're only going to, and again, this is a poor analogy, but hey, you're only going to be able to sell BMWs in Switzerland. I'm sorry. We get first dibs. Look, this is going to swing both ways. If we unilaterally make this decision, America first, and nobody else gets these N95 respirators, which the frontline healthcare workers need so desperately, other countries might say, well, you know what? We're going to think twice about shipping you ventilators, which are made in Germany and the Netherlands. Or, you know, the gowns and some of the other masks are made in other countries. China, by the way, manufactures most of our pharmaceuticals. We're going to think twice about shipping those to you when you need them. It swings both ways. It's a double-edged sword, Jordana.
That week, it really is. And it's, and look, I want to protect Americans as much as everybody. I think you're right. We are getting hard hit here. We don't know how long this is going to last. And our healthcare workers are of utmost importance. But I think it would be hard for 3M to say, okay, we're only protecting this group, or we're not protecting this group, or we're going to hoard here and we're not going to hoard there. It seems crazy to me, Paul, that there aren't enough, that we can't wrap up these kind of manufacturing facilities to make more. I know they can produce about, what did you say, 10 million a month? And still, that isn't enough. You know, we've learned that the kids over at the University of Minnesota are trying to find substitutes for these kind of respirator masks. But it seems that the backlash from not shipping to other countries would be so great against the United States that I don't know that we can risk that.
Look, we all look at life through the lens of our own self-interest. If I had a son or daughter who was a doctor or a nurse, would I feel mm-hmm. differently? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would damn well want them to get the N95 respirators, whatever it took. So I get that. I'm just saying it's a slippery slope, and if we do it to other countries, they can do it to us. Scott in Oakdale, do you have an opinion on this?
Hi, Paul and George. Yeah. Hey. As a purchasing manager in the manufacturing industry, I can guarantee you that the reason this is tough for 3M is because, and I'm in the middle of working out, so sorry if I sound out of breath, but I had to get on this one. But the big problem that they've got, you know, is their contractual obligations. Sure. And within the terms of a contract, you've got what's stated as force majeure, which is, you know, if they're, nobody's basically liable for breaching a contract if, in fact, there are unknown natural causes that don't allow the supply chain to continue on. However, you know, in this case, they could probably get sued by so many companies after this goes away. That might be a problem that they're dealing with.
Yeah, the lawyers are involved, and force majeure is a slippery slope, too. Great point, Scott. You bring up some very good points. Thank you, sir.
You know, thanks.
Good luck.
3M has said it's raised, and good luck with your workout, and thank you for listening while you're working out, Scott. We appreciate that. Hopefully, folks are listening on their smart speakers. You can listen at radio.com. You can tell Alexa lots of ways to listen while you're at home, because CCO, we're now going to go to the president.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.